traveling the world, searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Equestrians of all breeds to all countries in the equestrian industry. This is Scott Miller here with the International Equine Report. And we're going to do a little something different here today. We're going to kind of take a vacation tour of some of the different facilities, equestrian facilities across the U.S. Next week, we'll be doing international facilities from Japan and from Hong Kong and from Europe. But this week, we're starting with the U.S. facilities. And it's something now that we can start planning for in the springtime and the summertime. It's best to always try to prepare 3 to 4 months in advance so you can arrange accommodations such as airline tickets, car rentals, hotels, that type of thing. That's what we're trying to do here at the International Equine Network is get you on the inside so that you can enjoy your stay and have something to look forward to. And the first stop on our journey today will be the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington, Kentucky. It's a beautiful park, just unbelievable. They've got camping, they've got a good swimming pool, they've got a good general store, they got a restaurant, so they got any and everything that you could want around there. And plus, they have a lot of equestrian events. And that's the Kentucky Horse Park. And I'm going to give you a little bit of the history of the Kentucky Horse Park. It's unique and different in the way it came about. There have been horses on these grounds for the last 200 years. In 1777, Patrick Henry, then governor of Virginia, granted 9,000 acres of land in the Kentucky Territory to his brother-in-law, William Christensen, as a reward for his service to the French and Indian War. A wealthy Virginian, Colonel Christian, moved his family to Kentucky in 1785 and established a farm on Beargrass Creek near Louisville. Christensen was killed by the Indians in 1786, and his daughter Elizabeth Dickerson inherited the Elkhorn Creek tract of 3,000 acres of land in both Scott and Fayette counties. Part of this land became the Kentucky Horse Park. Elizabeth eventually sold the largest section of her land to her brother-in-law, Dr. Walter Warfield. He, in turn, sold it to his colleagues, Dr. William H. Richardson, in 1826. Richardson named his new land cane land after the abundance of cane he found growing wild in the Big Spring. Cane land became known as a beautiful English garden, and it was first farm in Kentucky to establish a greenhouse. Richardson was also the first owner to raise thoroughbreds, horses. Well, what other kind of thoroughbreds would there be? But I get excited every time I think about the Kentucky Horse Park. Bred thoroughbred horses on this section of land in 1840s. The Richardson family was hit hard by a cholera epidemic and was struck Lexington, and eventually Richardson's family was no more. By 1850, the land had been sold to a person by the name of Lafayette Muir. Lafayette was married to Ann Boone, a niece of Daniel Boone. Together, they further developed the farm and specialized in raising saddlebreds. After Muir's death, the farm was sold to S.J. Sawyers in order to divide the inheritance between Muir's many children. Sawyers began to once again breed thoroughbreds on the property. He was also responsible for building the residence now used as the offices of the Kentucky Horse Park. So when you go to the Kentucky Horse Park, you're going to see a building that's really old, and it's really nice. They've done a great job with it there that they have at the Kentucky Horse Park like they do with everything else there. So, what we're trying to tell you is there's a lot to go there, to look at. Built by 1890, the farm had once again been sold, this time to John D. Creighton. Creighton renamed the land Ashland Wilkes Farm and began to raise and train trotting horses. He built a training track in 1897 that is still used today at the Kentucky Horse Park. Unfortunately, Creighton was forced to sell his farm shortly after that in order to pay for his many creditors. For a short time after Creighton was forced to sell, the farm was owned by two Lexington bankers. They leased the land to Colonel Milton Young, owner of McCarthyana Farms and now Spindletop Farms and Coldstream Farms. He sent several of the standardbred yearlings raised on the property to a New York auction where the agent for Captain Sam S. Brown saw them. Captain Brown liked their looks so much that he purchased their home in order to raise the horses in a similar caliber. So he liked the way things were going there, the water, the lay of the land, and everything. And it was good and everything. So it just goes to show you that these areas that we're talking about here in Kentucky have been there for a long time. So when you go there, you're going to see historical evidence of how the standard bred industry and the third bred industry grabbed hold of the land in Lexington and took off. It's really a great, great trip. A wealthy coal baron, Brown rebuilt the farm and named it Sonora Farm, stud farm, after one of his favorite mares. He also played a pivotal role in supporting the Kentucky Association of Racetracks in Lexington and eventually developing the new Keeneland Racetrack. Brown also built water towers around the farm to pump fresh water to his horses from a spring that never ran dry. So it goes to show you that, you know, at these parks that we're talking about and that you're going to, there's a lot of thought that went into them for longevity. And by pumping, building the water towers and pumping the water into the water towers from an endless amount of water there in the farm, it gave them consistency and they never did have to worry about running out. So, you know, that's really was a great idea that they had. Senorita Brown stabled good stock at Senorita Farm, which with a Kentucky Derby winner, Buchanan, in 1884. Brown's death soon began to fail, or Brown's health soon began to fail. He died shortly thereafter. The farm was then offered to public auction, and Lehman V. Harkins was the buyer. Harkins named the farm Walnut Hill Farm and developed it into the largest and best-known standardbred farm in the world. He built the farm for 450 acres and 12 mares in 1894 to 2,000 acres and 100 mares in 1904. The big barn, which is still standing at the park, was built by Harkins in 1897. The big barn is 476 feet long and has 52 stalls and a sale area to complete the auctioneer's block whenever they have their sales there. So it's just really, you know, interesting to see places like the Kentucky Horse Park and, you know, things like that that are in the business. And you really don't have to know anything at all about the horse business or anything of that, you know, so you don't have to worry about when you go in there because you're going to be entertained. It's a story, you know. It's history. It's historic. You know that's why I like talking about, you know, places like this. And speaking of the horse park there, and you know a little bit about where it is, and you can go see it during the spring this year on Saturday, March 12th, 2022, at 10 a.m. To Sunday, March 13th, 2022, 4 p.m., the Alltech Arena is going to be hosting the Kentucky Crafted Market. The market will be open to the public 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. March 12th and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on March 13th. The event will be open only to registered wholesale buyers for trade only on trade-only day, and that's 10 to 5 p.m., March 11th. It says more than 80 of the Kentucky best visual and arts and crafts for painters, you name it, they're going to have it, will be there. And they have a craft program that will exhibit and sell their works at the market. So, you know, that you can go get you a nice original painting, you know, from the Kentucky Horse Park, which is really nice to do. There is a parking fee of $5 there. So it's going to be a great time, a great weekend that you can go and spend with the family, see the market, and you're also be available to go to all of the horse park when you go there for that. It's not throughout the whole horse park. It's any and everything that's there. $5, park your car and go look. And that's what we're trying to get across to people out there. Enjoy the equine industry. It's very affordable in many cases that when you go to them. We're going to talk now about traditions and things of that nature. We're going to talk about the Kentucky Derby Festival, which is just 93 miles away from Lexington. So you've got a lot of things that you can do there in Lexington and see everything and do a lot of things with the Lexington Tourism Bureau, see the farms and things of that nature. But just 93 miles west of Lexington there, you have the Kentucky Derby coming up at the end of the first Saturday in May. And they've got a week-long festival that lasts 10 days, and it's 10 days prior to the Kentucky Derby. And their mission is to provide creative and unique entertainment and community services for the people of the greater Louisville area that directly contributes to the aesthetic, culture, educational, charitable, and economic development of the area. We will organize, promote, and conduct events using the collective efforts and resources of volunteers, small and large businesses, nonprofit organizations, and government entities to enhance the positive international recognition, economic and cultural development of and community image of the greater Louisville area. And they do a fantastic job with this little project that they have. Well, it's not a little project anymore. It's really good. Bringing the community together in celebration. We've stretched a famous 2 minutes into a month-long party, what the Run for the Roses is to the horse racing. So in other words, what they're doing is they're trying to bring the community up to activities and things for people to do prior to the Derby that's equal to the Derby as far as reputation is concerned. That'll never happen because the Derby is the greatest horse race in the world, and Louisville slowly getting the Derby Festival to be one of the best festivals in the world. It's just amazing what they can do there. The festival is one of the premier events of its kind in the world, and proud 5-time winner of the International Festivals and Events Association Award for Best Overall Festival. It brings fun and excitement, international recognition, and a spirit that's unmatched anywhere in the world. When 1.5 million people gather to celebrate spring and a unique vitality of their community, the focus is on fun and the whimsical aspects of, how would we say this, a festival. I don't like to call it a festival. I like to call it an event because that's exactly what it is. It's just amazing what they do there. We are a community organization of 4,000 volunteers who work all year round to provide quality entertainment that enhances the community, said festival president and CEO Matt Gibson. Produced annually since 1956, the Derby Festival has become a whirlwind of more than 70 special events. So you're not going to be able to see everything all in one day, and that's why it's created a 10-day window to come down to see there at the Kentucky Derby Festival. Now, the festival blasts off each year with opening ceremonies, Thunder Over Louisville, one of the nation's largest annual fireworks extravaganzas. The ensuing 2 weeks of excitement and entertainment promises something for everyone. For sports fans, there is basketball, volleyball, and golf. For music lovers, the concerts are almost nonstop, with two-thirds of the festival events free. And that says a lot there when you go there. All you got to do is worry about parking, and you go there, and there are free events that you can go to. That says festival events, free families can enjoy numerous numerous activities for the kids without stretching their pocketbooks. And that's really important when you have a festival to success, is the pricing of it. And a lot of these events are really free and enjoyable, and you can have a great time there. Other highlights include a half and full marathon, hot air balloon event, and a live bed race. That bed race is really great because a lot of the businesses get together and they put usually a full or a king size or queen size bed up on rollers, and they dress up in costumes, and they have to have somebody sleeping in the bed as they push the bed down the street and see who can win. It's all about a good, clean, competitive competition. The Great Steamboat Race pits historic paddle wheelers on the mighty Ohio River. The event started it all, the Pegasus Parade marches down Broadway. So you got a boat race and you got a Pegasus Parade, and the parade is like the Rose Bowl Parade, you know, that type of thing. And it's really good, they have. With outdoor concerts at Kroger's Festival and the Elegant Phillies Derby Ball Dance, and dress range from frivolous to fancy. The festivals include several formal affairs as well as casual affairs. Foot stomping good times all around the community, from the elephant ears and corn dogs at the chow wagon to the ethnic and pet-friendly cocktail hours that they have at the Kroger Festival. Local wine tasting with the Wine Fest, culinary adventures abound the 10-day celebration. More than just being reiterating of how important this is to the community, the Derby Festival generates excess of $127 million for the local economy. Events on the festival schedule also help to raise nearly $300,000 for area charities each year. The Commonwealth's largest annual event and one of Louisville's most popular entertainment attractions, celebration is produced by Derby Festival Incorporated, a nonprofit civic organization with a professional staff of 23 members and a volunteer board of 75. So it's just really a great time to go and see there in Louisville. The festival is a lot better than my announcing is, I guarantee you that, that's for sure. But it's great for the family. The fireworks show, it lasts about an hour long. They have flyover, they also have an air show there. They have a flyover military airplane. So, you know, it's really an amazing place to go to see. And so you need to start planning that now to get there in the spring. And who knows, you might even get to go to the Derby that year. They also, in Lexington, going back to Lexington, they had the Rolex three-day event in Lexington that right there towards the end of April. And that's an amazing thing. You know, almost 1 million people to that, and that festival, too, there in the three-day event, Rolex, at the Kentucky Horse Park, which is really good. So, you know, that's something to start looking at now. I'm making plans for the Kentucky Derby Festival. It's coming up in April and May. And like we said, a lot of places that we go to, Tryon Resort. It's 2 months until the 7th Tryon Blockhouse races on April 16th, 2021. Where will you be at on April 16th? In just 2 months, the 74th running of the historic Tryon Blockhorse races steeplechase will take place in gorgeous Green Creek race course. It's just unbelievable there in Green Creek. It's just so, it's up in the mountains, and it's a beautiful place to go. From fancy hats and crazy pants to breathtaking horse races and festive tailgate step-ups, you won't want to miss it. Read below to hear what guests or participants alike love about the blockhouse races and how to plan your race day experience now. You got to go now, as they say on TV, now. It's a great event to go to. You know, it's out in the country. It's a good time to go. Just relax with the family, do a little sightseeing and touring of the area, and it's really good. What keeps spectators coming back? It's not our traditional Derby horse race, where there are hours and days of build-up for merely one lap around the flat dirt oval with no jumps. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to compare this to Churchill and their Derby festival, which is good. And this festival is really good too. It's really good too. Now these are race horses that go over the hurdles, go over the fences and the jumps. And it's really exciting to see. At the blockhouse races, steeplechases, every 30 minutes, you get a witness, a new twitchy and amped up combination of man and steed bolt through hill climbs, towering jumps, and a race to the finish line. Steeplechase is an experience that brings beauty, drama, and action to all together in one spring day. The grassy tailgating along the fence line immerses your group into the action. And that's what I like about it. You can pull up there with your vehicle and bring you a table and sit right there on the side of the racetrack, all over the course. Various places you can, whether it's the finish line or the start line, it's a great place to go. You can sit there and tailgate, and you don't have to worry about, you know, getting a box seat or anything, because you're just right there like you're on a picnic. It says that they've asked a horse trainer, why steeplechase? Why attend? You know, because of the beauty of it. Watching a horse jump is so beautiful. It's poetic. It's an opportunity to enjoy yourself with your friends while beautiful outdoors. You get a heightened sense of appreciation for the beauty combined with the speed of racing. It's definitely unique and inspirational. The people come to the races because it's exciting, and I am excited to see what kind of party is going to happen this year at the blockhouse races. And so that's really interesting. You know, you can kind of make your own party. It's kind of like being at your own home, make your own party when you go there. About the track, the track is just a beautiful facility there that I really do like. When I go to it, you get relaxed. It's a great weekend to go, you know, go and look at and relax and enjoy everything. In partnership with Tryon Riding and Hunt Club, Tryon International Equestrian Center Resorts is proud to present Tryon Blockhouse Races on a fully irrigated and recently updated course for the highest quality of experience for the jockeys and the horses alike. The A-rated mile and the 16th course presents a stunning backdrop for a day of tailgating and horse racing. You know, it's great. It's great to be there. The infield is another thing. And like the Kentucky Derby, they got an infield, but it's like being in a corral at the Derby. It's fun and it's exciting, but it's not quite like it is the infield at Tryon. It says it says it all when you go there. That's what I like about it. Contests will be held for the best hat, crazy pants, and tailgate setup celebrating traditional attire and festive decor typically seen at steeplechase events. Food trucks will be will be present to supplement your tailgating needs. Children's activities such as face painting, pony rides, as well as substantial Easter egg hunt will take place alongside cornhole games, entertainers, and more. Admission for children is free. So again, you know, this is not going to cost you an arm and a leg, you know, to go to. It's all fan-friendly and very inexpensive, you know, for a day worth of entertainment for the family. And they can participate in a lot of the events there, like the face painting and the pony rides and, you know, that type of thing. It says, gates open at 10 a.m. The fun continues all day with races starting at 1 p.m. and continuing every 30 minutes through 5 races. Tailgate spots are available on the rail. Assigned, you'll be assigned a spot when you go in, or in the infield, which is unassigned. The unassigned one's kind of nice because you can kind of pick out your spot. But if you want to have a little feeling of security, go to the rail and get an assigned spot there for you. Since tailgate spots are sold by vehicles, including up to 6 passengers, with additional passengers tickets available. For more information, go to tryon.com/steeplechase.com. They'll tell you everything that you need to know there. And you know, when you go to events like this, like the Derby Festival and the Tryon and all the different places that you can go to, it's nice to go and do your homework. If you go to, like, say, the Derby Festival or here to try on to the block horse races, what you want to do is educate yourself as much as you possibly can. Go to their website, get all the information on it, where you can set and have it in front of you, and you can kind of plan out your schedule for it. How long it takes to get there, where hotels are around there, if they have camping facilities, you know, just what they might have there. And that's really a good kind of thing to do, is really plan it out. And I suggest that you check in each state and each area that you're in. You can go in and you can Google equestrian events for your area. And you'd be surprised how many events there are in your area. Some of them might be local and, you know, very small. For example, you know, you have a lot of small groups that put on horse shows at their farm or their barn to help support their programs year round. You know, you'll see a lot of that happening. And those are a lot of the good farms to go to, because they're really personal and it's not really, you know, there's not 100,000 people there and you can really have a great time. And a lot of times they might do it once, twice, maybe even 3 times a year, you know, in your local area, you know, there for it. So that's what we're trying to tell everybody, get out and experience the horse industry. Google equestrian events, my area. And you'd be surprised what all you'll find there. And another thing that we like talking about is a little information we have called Chukar. It's about international and domestic polo. You have the ability to tailgate. You'll find out tailgating in the equine industry is really a big thing to do. It's almost like a NASCAR thing. You know, where you can go tailgate, camp, bring your RVs, you know, that type of thing. And Chukar, like I said, is about international and domestic polo. It's a great sport. A lot of people really don't understand it. And I myself do have sometimes understanding, you know, the sport itself. But it's a good sport to watch. And it's an exciting sport to watch. And the thing that I would do if I were going to go to a polo match, and especially here in South Florida, and if you're down in the area, it just takes a little bit of time, and it's very close to polo grounds and the show grounds. It's at 9011 Lake Worth Road, Lake Worth, Florida, 33467. Their number is 561-969-3210. And this is the Polo Hall of Fame. And it is a phenomenal, it's a small building, very nice, well put together, very educational. The Museum of Polo and Hall of Fame is a not-for-profit educational and organization dedicated to fostering an appreciation of the sport of polo, its history and development and traditions by acquiring, preserving, and exhibiting the interpreting collections, as well as honoring those who have made our outstanding contributions to the sport. You know, just think how much fun you're going to have when you don't have me telling you what it's about or how to get there. You'll enjoy it. You'll understand it more, I guarantee you that. It says the museum is a rich repository of documents and physical treasures, which include works of art, historic trophies, artifacts, books, statistics, periodicals, films, videos, and recordings and memorabilia. And see, again, like we talked about last week, on our show about the art aspect of it. There's a lot of artists that do polo, and they have some phenomenal artwork there at the museum in Lake Worth. The Hall of Fame honors the heroes of the sport each year, inducting icons of the past and eligible living heroes of polo. The Hall of Fame Induction Awards Dinner Gala takes place each year on the Friday of President's Day weekend in February. So we've had that, and it's very exciting, you know, for the people that go in there. But what I like about it is the lighting and the way the Polo Museum is set up. It's just unbelievable. It's a beautiful facility. They have people that work there, that are walking around. They'll be glad to talk with you and tell you exactly what it's about. Answer any of your questions that you have, you know, and then they'll direct you how to get to the nearest polo fields. Now, one of the things that polo does is a lot of times you can catch practice matches during the week. They'll come out and have practice match against various polo clubs in the area, and then on Sundays they have the big United States Polo Association matches that are the ones that go for the big money and go for the international recognition of polo matches. And also, but it's a great place. It's in Lake Worth, Florida. And I would suggest go to it, take a look and see what they have there and spend a couple of hours there looking at it. Who knows, you might be able to catch a match that weekend that you go. One of the things that we're going to talk about now, and I'm always trying to talk about and say things about helping the horse industry, the equine industry. And each association has its own program set up for festivals, events, you know, contributions, how they support their industry. You know, in the equine industry, whether it's a festival or, you know, art sale or, you know, equine sale, that type of thing. But a lot of the state's agriculture departments get behind all these equestrian events. And one of the things that I'm really familiar with a lot is KBIF awards, nearly $15.9 million is being allocated to the Kentucky breeders. It's a shared $15.9 million payday for Kentucky thoroughbred horse breeders as the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission announced the release of the 2021 Kentucky Thoroughbred Breeders Incentive Funds, totaling $15.9 million for Kentucky breeders. Every thoroughbred farm, big or small, contributes to the equine industry, combined an economic impact of $6.5 billion to the state of Kentucky, which also employs 60,494 Kentuckians in the business, said Governor Andy Beshear. Kentucky is known for the horse capital of the world for a reason, and it's important we support those in this industry to ensure the continued success. In fact, the Kentucky bred horses had 315 group and graded wins, including Mystic Guide, to win the prestigious Dubai World Cup, an international race that attracts horses from all over the world. This year's winners of 4,412 races, including 299 graded races, received awards here in Kentucky. Since KBIF was implemented in 2005 to ensure the strength of the Kentucky equine industry by awarding funds to individuals who choose to breed a thoroughbred in the state of Kentucky. To qualify, the resulting foal must remain in the state during gestation and the final award amounts are based on the foal's eventual earnings at the racetrack. So, you know, it's really important that we support the farms and that this money goes to a good, you know, cause to help stabilize and promote the economy. And when you think about it, $6.5 billion and 60,494 people, that's a lot of people that have come into to the state and local communities that are shopping at Walmarts and Burger Kings and, you know, going to the hospitals and buying cars and renting houses and buying houses and everything. That's a lot of people, you know, when you look at it, you know, to help the economic impact of the horse industry. The KBF, BIF is funded through a percentage of sale taxes paid when a stallion is bred to a mare in Kentucky. Since the fund's inception, more than $200 million has been distributed to Kentucky breeders for winning eligible races worldwide. For a complete list of 2021 award winners and statistics, go to thebloodhorsedaily.com and everything. So it's just, you know, one of the ways that we're helping the horse industry, you know, in the state of Kentucky and state of Florida and New York and Missouri and, you know, all over the United States to, you know, help them have success and get their programs going and not have to struggle as much. So it's really good. So now, after talking about the breeding program and why people breed the horses, it's because they like to get on to the road to the Kentucky Derby 2022. The standings are, and I'll just give you the top four or five here, and they change every weekend because of the Derby points that are allotted and to the ones that win races and the ones that don't do so well. This week, Classic Causeway. He's a Giants Causeway out of American Private War, Private World. His stakes earnings are $246,100. Career earnings is $301,000. He's trained by Brian Lynch. And Brian has got a whole bunch of Derby horses this year. That's Classic Causeway. You'll be seeing him coming up here racing soon in the next week or two. Papa Cat, it's a Gunrunner colt by Papa Scat. It's $558,000 in stakes earnings, $596,000 in career earnings, and trainer Mark Cassie. Mark's a great trainer. His day's coming. He's getting close to the Derby wins, and his day's coming. He's a good trainer, consistent, and whenever you see a Mark Cassie horse in a race, you got to beat him. That's for sure. Then we have Epic Center, Not This Time Stallion, Silent Candy. He's got let's see here, in stakes earning, he's got $100,000. In total earnings, he's got $170,000 earnings, trained by Steve Asmussen. Just a really great, great horse there. I think he's going to do a lot of things for Westwind Farms and Winchell Thoroughbreds. I think he's going to do it for them. And then we have White Abario, Race Day Catching Diamonds. Race Day is a stud, Catching Diamonds the mare. He has 12 points. all the above horses that we just talked about had either 16 points from Classic Causeway, and then Papa Cap and Epic Center had 14. Whitey Barrow has 12 points. He's got $186,000 in stakes earnings, $240,000 total. It's a Spencer Farm horse, and Safi Joseph Jr. trains it. And he's a good horse. He just recently won here in Florida. It was a race that he just dominated, there. That was the Holy Bull Stakes last weekend. And we'll talk about that here in a little bit. And McGonigal, this horse has been in the hunt for a lot of things this year. He's trained by Todd Fletcher, and he's an Uncle Mo calling Mrs. Brown. Mayor, it's he's earned $161,000, $221,000 total, and this horse has been in the hunt with it. He's been in a lot of tough competition, state races, and everything. So he's really proven. And the only thing I see him is getting better as he gets a little bit older. He's going to be really a nice horse down the way. Another horse that everybody is really high on is he's a nice rated horse. He's named Smile Happy, a Run Happy horse out of Pleasant Smile. He's got 10 points and $234,000 in stakes earnings, $284,000 in total earnings, which is really a good horse. He's been around, and he shows promise every time he runs. He just gets better. But this is my long shot horse on the Derby trail. I think he's going to be there for Doug O'Neill. He's got 10 points. He's a Nyquist horse out of Edwina E. Mayer. His name's Slow Down Andy, and that's exactly what they're going to he's going to have to do is slow down. They're going to have to slow him down in order to get him. But I think he's the long shot. Doug O'Neill trained, good California horse, and he's a runner now. There ain't no two ways about it. He is a flat-out runner, and he just needs a little racing luck, and he needs the only thing stopping him from winning the Derby is just a little bit of racing and getting to the first Saturday in May for the Derby. So that's kind of like our Derby horses of the week. Now we're going to talk about the Derby dozen. We're not going to go through all the Derby dozen. We're just going to go through the top three or four here up here. Rattle and Roll is at the top of the list. The owner and trainer is Lucky Seven Stable. Kenny McPeak is the trainer. He's a nice bred Kentucky bred horse. The February 12th victory in the Sam Davis Stakes at Tampa Bay Downs from Classic Causeway was encouraging to see from a form compression standpoint. This coat is really nice. He defeated him by 4¾ length in the Claiborne Breeders Futurity in Keeneland last year. Not as far along in conditioning as Kenny McPeak and other leading three-year-olds would like to be, but Rattle and Roll targeted the March return. His training should amp up soon after two relatively mediocre or moderate half miles works at Gulfstream. Really nice. And then, again, it just goes to how you show you point-wise, Smile Happy was at 9, but from the expert's opinion, he's at number 2 on the Derby Dozen list. This horse, like I said, is nice. The 8-1 favorite among individual betting choices in the pool, in the early pool 3 of the Kentucky Derby Future Wager is perfect in 2 starts, both around 2 turns. So, that says a lot for him coming into Churchill in the Derby. He's got the 2-turn experience. The second of those victories came November 27th in the Jockey Club Stakes in Keeneland, in which he defeated 3 of the next outgraded stakes winners. We'll get our first look at him as the 3-year-old February 19th in the Risen Star, which we're going to talk about here in just a minute. That race is going to be really, really a strong one. Then White Barrio, going back to him, and he just popped out of nowhere here last week. He in the Holy Bowl. After rolling in the Holy Bowl, plans for him to remain idle until April 2nd, Curling, Florida Derby, a Gulfstream in recent years is where he'll be. So they're going to give him a good time off to run, come back and run in the Florida Derby. So they think that he's good enough to do the things that he's doing. And let me tell you something. When they got a horse that they can lay off from April, from February 5th to April 2nd, it's going to be a project in itself. He must be really good. They're taking their time with him, and they're just going to bring him along slowly. They're going to let him recover from the Holy Bull, get him back in shape, and get him ready to run and see what they can do. And then, like we said, on how they get there and our journey to the 2022 Kentucky Derby, we had a couple of stake races here last week. One of them was the El Camino Royal Derby. It was a great race. Had some nice horses in it. The thing that I liked about it was a full field. And again, it was nice, really nice. Bob Baffert, he showed up, and he had a nice, good horse to run here, Black Adder. He's Bob Baffert trained. He went it by a neck. He come from way back off the pace to win it. He went too wide and dug in, and he won the race by a neck. And, oh, man, he's something else there. Doug O'Neill, he ran second with McKinnon, which people have touted for a long time of him being a potential Derby favorite. He was really good. He came a long, long way back to be there with Bob Baffert's horse. And it was kind of exciting, you know, to see those two horses go. And I look forward to seeing them again. But those are West Coast horses, and you probably won't see them come east, you know, until the Derby time coming up. There's a couple of good stake races for them out there on the West Coast that they can go into. And I'm just, you know, trying to figure it all out. We've got so many good horses that are popping up and jumping up, you know, into the polls in 1 week, and then the next week they're down. That type of thing. And I'll give you a good example. One of the horses that I have a little bit of an interest in, it excited me because I love Distorted Humor Colts. It is called Iron Works. Iron Works is the name of him. He's trained by Todd Pletcher. He broke his first maiden the first time out at Gulfstream going 6 furlongs. Ran a great race, didn't bother him. Then he comes back to run a mile a few weeks later, and he's going around 2 turns. And he had a little bit of issue going into the gate, but he went into the gate. Nothing, you know, that was major, you know, just something that a young horse has to learn. And the other thing was that he's seeing 2 turns for the first time in the crowd in the grandstands. For 2 turns. So he did really good. He made up a lot of ground when he was coming down in that mile, going a mile. And so Todd really thought a lot of him. And he said the next start for him will be the Tampa Bay Derby. And so, you know, you've got a horse that's lightly raced, but yet he shows enough talent that warrants to be in the Tampa Bay Derby. And a lot of horses are going to be in that Tampa Bay Derby, especially out of the Sam Davis over here. That classic causeway that was up at the top of our list there on the Derby Dozen. He ran in the Sam F. Davis. It was a grade 3, going a mile and a 16th on the dirt. It was a 13-horse field. You know, so he had to do some work to get to this one, and he wins it by 3 3/4 lengths. You know, Ortiz was in the irons and said the horse really did show him a lot of potential. for that race. That's a Brian Lynch trained horse. And, you know, I'm sitting here going down through looking at the list. And, there's a lot of these horses were eliminated for the Kentucky Derby Trail this year, that race. And you'll see them on a lot of undercard races and later on in the summer as they get older and get a little bit more experience. But that Sam F. Davis was a tough race. You know, they're in a 13-horse field, and they were all good horses in there. Very, very good horses, you know, for this time of year. And the interesting part about it is the way that the races have panned out and the way the trainers have run. A lot of trainers are desperately trying to get enough points for the Kentucky Derby this year. Me being on the end of this journey, or actually in the middle of the journey, with Ironworks. He might come up and win the Tampa Bay Derby. That's his next start. And if he wins the Tampa Bay Derby, he's in a position to get enough points to get into the Kentucky Derby. So then you got to really plan out where you go, what you do with him. You know, what derby prep race can you get in there to make sure you got enough derby points. You know, that type of thing, because when you get to this stage and point of the game, every race that you run between now and the 1st of May, Saturday in May, is going to be high quality, you know, tough races, and you're going to have to earn them. And it really is going to get tough. On the 19th of February, we have what they call the Risen Star Stakes. It's a grade two. It's from the fairgrounds in New Orleans. It's a $400,000 adding, and it's got a 10-horse field. And here comes my long shot in here for Doug O'Neill. It's Slow Down Andy. He's a cowbred, and they brought him east to run. And he's gonna really be tested Saturday to see what he's going to do. That's post time is 6:58 Eastern time. We got Papa Cat that's in there for Mark Cassidy that we just talked about. He's tough. He's tough. We got Epic Center for Steve Asmussen. He's tough. You know, Smile Happy. He's in there. He's tough. You know, so we're sitting here. We're looking at horses that three or four of them, you know, have run against each other or getting close. I tell you, a horse too, Pioneer of Medina, Todd Pletcher's horse. He's going to be a factor in that race, and you know, to go from Florida all the way to Louisiana for this race, you know, says a lot about the quality of the horse that they're taking down there. And so I'm really thinking, you know, that these trainers now—it's a trainer's mind game, an owner's game. Where do you get there? You know, a lot. Sometimes you sit back and think, like, how did I get myself in a position to get a horse that possibly could run and win the Kentucky Derby and be in a position where you might not have enough points to get him into the Derby? You know, and that's one of the things that you got to look at. And that planning that you have, you kind of evaluate your horse at the beginning when you start getting the horse in your barn. And you start to see how he progresses, how he recovers from works, how he recovers from racing, the things that you have to work on, how many of them are natural, how many of them are things that you're going to have to, you know, find an answer to. You know, why does he act up in the starting gate? You know, why does he not like dirt, they say? You know, there's just so many things that you got to, you know, really worry about. At this time, at this stage and time of the game. So now we have coming up here, we got the Risen Star on the 19th. There's 50 points to the winner, 20 to second, 10 to third, and four to in fourth place you get five. And that's a nice race there. You get a lot of points. You get in there and you win that thing, and you're almost guaranteed a Kentucky Derby spot added to any points that you might have. Then they have the Hyacinth Stakes. It's in Japan. It's on February 20th. They have 30 points to win, 12 for second, 6 for third, 3 for fourth. It's a $321,000 going a mile, about a mile. So that's going to be a nice race over there. And it's unlikely that these Japanese horses come out to go to the Derby because the money's so good in Europe and in Asia. And then on the 26th, we have the Rebel Stakes. It's another Kentucky Derby race, 50 points to the winner, 2010 and 5. It's the Rebel Stakes. It's a nice race to run in. If you can win that sets you right up for the Arkansas Derby, which is a nice race to win and go into the Kentucky Derby with a tight-fit horse. Then we have the John Battaglia Stakes, Memorial Stakes. It's March 5th. You get 10 for win, 4 for second, 2 for third, and 1 for fourth. So it's a smaller race there, for them. But it's a lot of people have used that to tighten them up right before the Derby, comes in. You might be able to get by with, getting that in March 5th, and then, that's 2 months away for the next Derby. But now we get into the real meat of them, to the real races that are really going to really set you up front. It's March 5th. We have the Fountain of Youth Stakes at Gulfstream. We have the Gotham Stakes coming up from Aqueduct to San Felipe, coming from California. And it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. We got the Road to the Kentucky Derby Condition Stakes out of Europe on March the 9th. And we have the Patent Stakes on March 11th out of Europe. You might see somebody come out of there to come over and try to test the waters here. And then on January, so that's where we're looking at. That was a good January that we had. It was good all the way around. And, folks, the whole thing that we're trying to do here, and I know I awkwardly stumbled through a lot of this stuff, but my whole goal is here in International Equine Network is to become the distribution outlet for the equine industry. We're going to get some announcers in here and some people in here to help me get through these things. But the whole long and short of what we're doing at International Equine Network and our website is to distribution of equine information. And you don't have to be an equestrian to go to our site. You don't have to be an equestrian to go to these events. The whole long and short of it is make a family day out of it, or make a family weekend out of it, or make it a family week. It's something you can do on vacation. It's year-round, and all you got to do is go to the websites or go to our website and click onto their link, and you can see what they have going on there. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to promote the equine industry, whether you're involved in it or you're from the outside, go to an equine event in your area. Just Google equine events for your area and you will have a great time. I guarantee you will not be disappointed. You will not, you might be wearing a cowboy hat someday and you might have a cowboy hat on, but no cows. So that's what it's all about. So stay tuned next week at 1 o'clock on Thursday for International Equine Report. Give us a call at any time at 561-466-1272 and let us know what your opinion is. And we'll go from there. So until next Thursday, have a great week.